Okay, let's get this show on the road. It is 9 a.m., and it fills every minute of early 9 a.m. on Friday. Friday the 13th.
Black Friday, as it's sometimes known. Yeah, Michael and I here.
Sorry,
I apologize.
2018, in case you didn't know that. And you are in the UMC Center Ballroom. This is panel number 5010. WTF, shocking news of today. Hang on, it could be a bumpy ride. All right, so congratulations for making on 9 o'clock on Friday morning of the last week of this mental mashup known as the Conference of World Affairs on World Affairs. This is truly and only in Boulder. My name is Ralph Gregory, and I think they have me here because I've been in media literally all of my life. I started at age 14 testing radio tubes, and those under 40 are going, radio tubes? What are you talking about? The TV tubes. I eventually ended up owning a chain of radio stations, and I currently host a TV talk show on Boulder's channel TV 8. It's called Deliberate Conversations, and we do a format very similar to this. And so let's get this one going right now. To introduce the remaining guilty parties up here, and I will abandon all pretense at chivalry, let's start with Michael Johnson. Michael knows many ways to kill antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which makes him eminently qualified for this council. We also have Robert George, and Robert is an honest-to-goodness journalist, and he is the true expert up here in shocking. He covers the president every day.
Is this all fake news?
Bonnie Burton is a hilarious woman, and that is an accurate description. I am going to quote what she said in the newspaper yesterday, in the Daily Camera. She says, "Sometimes it feels like we're living in a never-ending Saturday Night Live sketch. Or even worse, an episode of Black Mirror." I don't know what Black Mirror is.
Oh, you should watch it. It's on Netflix. It's just the future. It's all.
Oh, all right.
It's a Black Mirror thing you wouldn't understand.
Okay. Yeah, it's Twilight Zone with tech, basically. It's our future.
We are also joined by the clearly intelligent Ms. Jennifer Thompson, who prefers the outdoors out of the range of Twitter. And our last guest, not the least, Heather Hurlburt, who is a survivor of deliberate conversations. And she follows politics every day for a living. Imagine doing that on a daily basis. To quote Heather, "Some societal taboos have been broken down, and things that used to be shocking no longer are, and that's a positive." That gives you a little take on Heather. I want to quote the writer yesterday in the Boulder Daily Camera. He had a pretty good description of this, and now I'm not even finding it, but it was something along the lines that the Onion, the newspaper, the Onion, it used to have, that's where you went for your shocking news. I don't think you have to go that far anymore. So let's throw it over to our panelists, and I can tell you that for years in the news business, it was, if it bleeds, it leads. And I don't know that that's still the case. So panelists, what is shocking news?
I just want to add this because I did tweet this the other day from The Onion. There's a picture of, it looks like kind of like this, only many more suits. Well, just suits. It's a picture, and the headline, it's like scientists at a panel. And the headline is, "Sighing, resigned climate scientists say to just enjoy the next 20 years as much as you can." And that was The Onion, and now I'm like thinking, I'm probably going to see that in New York Times next week, right? Yeah.
It's
so,
coming.
Well, the amusing thing is, Ralph just said that you used to go to the Onion for like shocking news. The Onion is now actually news that goes up on Twitter, and people have to put "not the Onion" in front of it
because there's all these subgroups for it, and it's. Yeah.
Yeah. We are now no longer in the normal universe. We are depending on your preferred continuity. We're either on Earth 2 or Earth 3, and it's partly a lot of it, of course, is coming from a certain individual in the White House.
Frank, the janitor. It's all his fault.
Freaking Frank.
This has been his agenda the whole time.
We actually almost got through the week without crazy tweets. And I was really shocked. I was thinking, you mean to say I'm away from my job for the whole week, and I'm in lovely Boulder here, and we don't have to deal with a reality show star tweeting some stuff out. But unfortunately, the advance copies of James Comey's book got out yesterday, and so
what's the title of the book?
A higher loyalty. Because as you may remember, the president was demanding loyalty from. Anyway, the tweets we got today: James Comey is a proven capital leaker and liar. All caps. Virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he did until he was in fact fired. He leaked, all caps, classified information for which he should be prosecuted. He lied to Congress under all caps, oath. He is a weak and untruthful slime ball who was, as time has proven, a terrible capital D director of the FBI. His handling of the crooked Hillary Clinton case and the events surrounding it will go down as one of the worst, quote, botch jobs, unquote, of history. It was my great honor to fire James Comey. That's about as peak Donald Trump as you will get. I mean, everything was there.
No, you're forgetting. People keep saying it's peak Donald Trump, and then something else happens that is more peak Donald Trump, which
and
is
you,
one.
And you forgot there's like a cat emoji and a poo emoji right after that. Don't ever forget the emojis.
I kind of want to be a little bit of a killjoy and not, as I don't really want to spend an hour talking about Donald Trump's tweets. And as tempting as it is to feel like we fell into this alternate universe the day that Donald Trump's Twitter became the commander-in-chief and the leader of the free world's Twitter, this is a ravine we've been falling into for a while. And Trump, in a way, is a product of the WTF news world that I think starts with the advent of 24/7 cable coverage. And so on the one hand, that we can go places and be barraged with shocking images all the time, we respond to that. 9/11 is a huge step in that direction. And also our ability to create a personalized daily me that can sort of shock me in ways, sort of my particular blend of pleasurable, tolerable, and intolerable. And Trump, I mean, as much as he's taken this to new depths that I couldn't have imagined even last week, because every week is like that, he is also, he got where he got by using the kind of shock apparatus that already existed. And, the sad thing is that he was very good at pushing the levers of the shock apparatus. Because if he goes away, if we are in Earth 3 and he's lifted away by aliens,
they don't want him. They don't want him. I tried that headline. It didn't work. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I cover science. That's the thing you should be clicking. So, and not cat videos and Trump hair debacles.
Science!
I mean, honestly, like, a journalist now, and I mean, feel free to chime in, the journalists that are on this panel. We're paid in traffic numbers now. So, we have editors who are usually about 10 to 20 years younger than us, saying, yeah, that's cool that there's that science study about something about cancer, but there's this cute cat Instagram star that's trending right now, so if you could cover that, that would be great, because in our advertising, people will be happy. And it's, you know what, advertising and journalists have been in battle since the beginning of Gutenberg. I'm just assuming the first thing at Gutenberg had like a small ad off to the side. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Gutenberg, just, yeah, Google it.
Make that your next project.
Make that next project. Well, we'll need it during the robot apocalypse when all tech goes down. So just, you know, remember that. I was up at 3 a.m. this morning writing an article for CNET about a new study that came out in February but was finally published online today or yesterday about all those air dryers in the bathrooms are actually spraying poo matter at you. Oh. So when you're drying your hands and thinking you're being all clean and not touching anything and you're using your sleeve to open the door, yeah, your hands are covered in fecal matter because you were saving the earth.
What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. And neither does Michael. Please.
Yeah. So it's called, what happens, see, the toilets and public restrooms don't have lids, right? So, oh, by the way, never put your toothbrush in the same room that has the toilet, because that's also, you've been brushing your teeth with your shit all this time. So what happens?
So I really do have a shit-eating grid is what you're trying to say.
Okay. And you have your shit together. Should we do all the colonic jokes that you say when you're nervous during a colonic?
Let the fecal finger of fate continue.
I'm losing my shit.
I think we're also freaking people out a little too much when we put that info out.
Oh, no, I've been warned. I've been warned not to.
Over-cleansing ourselves.
Oh, like, no, no.
We've lived pretty long time using public bathrooms.
So. So, I mean, you should still clean your hands. Don't be like, well, if Bonnie says I'm covered in shit, I don't have to wash my hands anymore. No, you probably should.
If there's a lid, you should close it.
If there's a lid, close it. But in a public bathroom, you're closing all the lids, and then you got stuff from the lids on your hands, so you're screwed. But, I mean, it's, you know, if you're at home, close lid, flush, but keep your toothbrush out of there. Don't put those lids on the toothbrush either, because that's full of bacteria. I mean, when you're a science journalist, you're like, well, that's great. I'm going to die tomorrow. But, you know, just know. And also keep in mind some of those studies, unless you actually read the study, a lot of journalists are lazy and they'll just read the abstract headline and go from there. Sometimes they don't even read the abstract. So a lot of times those stories you hear where, you know, dogs cause cancer and chocolate will give you extra sex drive, or chocolate will kill dogs. Don't do that. But I mean, there's like certain, you know, so sometimes when you read those headlines about weird science news, just know maybe the journalist didn't do their extra due diligence.
In the fairness to the journalists, the scientists do make it, Michael and I were on a panel earlier this week about this. The scientists do make it kind of rather expensive to read that entire abstract, that entire paper.
$4.
No, sometimes. So sometimes.
Let the scientists talk.
Yeah. So there are some articles that are behind paywalls. So you have to pay like $24, $25 just to see the article for 24 hours and $36 to see the whole thing. But on a university level, there are some ways to actually get around that. However, I will say this, like there are a lot of, and this is kind of as a scientist, this is some, you know, part of my pet peeve. When I'm reading a news media article about a scientific study, they don't actually cite the study. They don't even put the citation. They don't even put the paper. They don't. And I'm just like, WTF? Well, the name of the panel. Yeah. I fit it in. All right.
Well, recently, I think yesterday in the New York Times, there was a whole article on the polar bears. And that there's been, polar bears have been the face of climate change. You know, there's been all these predictions about the ice melt and then how it's going to impact the polar bear populations. And there was a scientific article that came out in Bioscience, basically, with all these scientists saying that there were these wrong predictions, saying that polar bears populations were actually fine, but then they were criticizing this I think zoologist in Canada saying, well, she doesn't have the background to really make these claims, and it wasn't in peer-reviewed journals. So there was almost this divide of judging science and almost putting it on different tiers. And in a lot of ways, like as a researcher, I get really frustrated with the system because we do a lot of research and then it stays in this little academic bubble where we just talk to each other, and it doesn't get out to the public, it doesn't get out to journalists, it doesn't get out to decision makers, or if it does, it's using all this technical jargon that no one can digest or use, and it's the way our system is set up. So I don't think it's about the researchers. In a lot of ways, I think the researchers want to get our information out there, but we're under the constraints of the system. And so our education at the higher level education system needs to change, I think, in order for us to have more access to that.
And that's a fantastic point. And that is, by the way, one of the reasons why, despite there being a large consensus on climate change and how much human activity contributes to it, there is a significant minority that is skeptical of it because let me just do this way. How many people have read in the news over the last couple of years that red wine is good for you? How many of you read in papers that red wine is bad for you? How many of you heard that coffee is bad for you? How many of you heard that coffee is good for you? When people say, well, you know, there's this huge consensus about climate change and so forth, and we need to do this and we need to do that, I think a lot of people in the back of their mind was, well, yeah, there's huge consensus on it, well, until next week. And we find out, the polar bears aren't actually dying out. Or maybe they are, dying out. It is very difficult. It's amazing that we are in the so-called information age, and we have all of this information, and it's not necessarily making us smarter or better informed. If anything, it is making us more confused. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is another reason why it was easier for the president of the United States to, you know, win the presidency, because with all of this, oh well, he's lying and she's lying, and people sometimes are kind of.
But how much of this is cherry picked?
Well, and I was going to say, this is why there's a peer reviewed process for scientific publications, in that you have to be reviewed by your peers. You don't just automatically get published. And
there's some journals that do, though, study about midichlorians. And for those of you who are Star Wars fans, that's made up. That's what Jedi are made of, to be Jedi. That actually went through a scientific journal that's one of those that isn't peer-reviewed. But a lot of journalists reputable journalists. Now, you need to back up here, because some of us reputable journalists are competing.
Journals.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, on your scientific level, yeah. But you guys are reading the news, and a lot of news isn't written by journalists that know better. A lot of journalists are writing what other journalists are writing. And a lot of journalists write what bloggers are writing. And a lot of bloggers are just writing stuff that they see on Eureka Alert or some other place, and they're not doing a double check. Fact checkers are the first people fired from all websites, just so you know. So that level of making sure that fake news or mistakes don't get through to the published stage is very difficult for a lot. And this is everywhere. I've seen those articles in Time, in Newsweek, across the board, whether it's liberal or not. So it's up to you sometimes to kind of do your due diligence. And if you're like, this really does sound not right, then you need to like maybe read one other paper or write a letter to the actual editor, like email or tweet something.
But
to
in
do
reality,
that.
No one actually has time to do that.
I know, but that's the problem. That is the problem.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. And I think I hear from this working at a university, a lot of students are saying, there's so much news out there, and a lot of times I don't get a newspaper or I don't want to pay to subscribe to the New York Times, even if I know it's a reputable source. So they're getting their news, and a lot of us get our news from a news feed in Facebook, which actually is just telling us what others find trending. It's not really what the actual news. And so in a way, it's like we're in the same bubble of seeing the same type of news. And if it's fake or it's not reputable, then we're in this bubble. And so it's a little alarming. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, as a journalist what are your suggestions to how to get?
I mean, for me, it's like I write for CNET, and most of you probably know CNET as that was kind of like the consumer reports of tech. It's like where you got reviews for software and hardware. But they do a lot of science and tech news as well. But they're owned by CBS. And CBS has very twitchy lawyers. And they don't want us to accidentally report something that may or may not be true. So we have to go. That's why a lot of times some science news gets up really fast on other websites. It's because they're not being fact-checked. Yeah. We always, like, get a company comment from the company we're talking about. We don't just say stuff. So, but that's not always the case. So I would say if you're reading something and if you have a favorite place where you get news, sometimes if it's science news or tech news, especially if that company is under attack or being accused of something, kind of make sure, did they say they tried to get a comment? Because if they didn't say they tried to get a comment from that company, that's a very good indicator that, first, there's probably no lawyers at that company that care, and that there's no fact-checking. And eventually, that'll get back. I mean, Gawker went under because they didn't do their due diligence, and they didn't have lawyers that they were talking to, and they posted stuff against a celebrity they shouldn't, and they went down. I mean, they went down for other reasons, too. But you really, as readers, you know, we just write what we can and hope you click. And it's up to you to actually click on stuff and make sure that, I mean, you don't have to do your own research. You don't have to read a whole scientific paper. But just be smart and use common sense. If it sounds like it's too good to be true and there's no, like, actual science quote or quote from that company that's being attacked, maybe it could be a rumor mill that's just been going round and round. They just want clickbait.
Hey, because that's, really, that's a scientist. Oh, let me say...
Okay, I was going to ask a question of Heather, but go ahead. I'll come back.
We are here. We are here. We are here.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
But we are also skeptical. I've heard from a lot of fellow scientists that they will not talk to media because they are worried that it's misquote. What they say is going to be misinterpreted.
And that's a giant problem because we, the peer, you know, the world that the rest of us live in is not peer reviewed. Peer review is not coming back. Walter Cronkite is not coming back. So this is a problem for science. It's a problem in my field because things move really quickly and I don't want to comment until I get all the facts. But nobody's waiting to publish till they get all the facts. Yeah. So if I don't comment, someone else is going to fill the space. So, you know, to you all, there is no substitute for paying for content. If you want good journalism, you got to pay for it. And I will say
I wouldn't agree with that at all. I think there's good journalism beyond the paywall, but you do have to be discerning.
But the second thing
I'm just saying that because I need
that
to pay
has
rent.
Got to happen is the media universe is going to be how it is as long as we live in capitalism. And frankly, I'm not sure at this point that the alternative isn't worse if you look at places like Hungary. So the second problem for all of us who possess specialized stores of knowledge in some way and who come out of environments where there is some kind of quality control and fact-checking, we have to figure out how to move our content into this new world, whether we like it or not. And that doesn't mean that every single scientist has to talk to reporters, but you got to figure out how your field or your university is sort of what's your trusted process for getting stuff out there and competing in this marketplace.
So a lot of universities do
making
have...
making us skeptical and stupid.
Yes.
So a lot of universities do have a science department that they put out
press
releases. Yeah. And so I'm kind
of... And they often suck.
They do.
Yeah, but I will say they save us journalists a lot of time because as much as we would love to get quotes from you guys, you take a long time. And so what we have editors breathing down our necks saying, okay, we need this science. The science news just hit. You have 10 minutes to write it, but not just write it. You have to find the image for it that goes with it that we can use legally. Then you have to do all the SEO, which is search keywords, because if you don't do that, it doesn't show up in Google search and no one will find your article. And then you have to do all the social media for Facebook and Twitter, which are different because the word count's different. Oh, and then you have to publish the article and you have 10 minutes. That's not an easy thing to do. And we do want science quotes, but sometimes you'll take a couple days and then it's gone and our editor will fire us. So press releases save our lives because if it comes officially from the university that's already been vetted and the scientist already approved that quote, then we don't have to worry about it.
And oftentimes, though, you know, it's funny, you have 10 minutes. These are things that it takes years and years to actually do. And that's when we actually submit the paper to be published. And then it's under peer review sometimes from anywhere between 6 weeks to also years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, of people, it's rounds and rounds of saying, did you try this control? Did you try this control? Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. Have 30 different figures, and each one of those figures has A, B, C, and D. and it all has to be summarized.
I will say that there is a middle ground that's come out recently called The Conversation, and it is a partnership between researchers and journalists, and it's a way for them to actually work together to take this scientific article and put it into a nice digestible form that then can be out there. And I think that's a great direction that we're going in, and then hopefully can get that information out to the public.
There's one Ralph of those for political science called The Monkey Cage, and there's one for history. Also, so like this is a broader trend. What you're talking about? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that 2 points. Ralph asked if the old adage of "if it bleeds, it leads" is still the case, and yes, it is. You know, speaking as somebody from working in a relatively good sized urban newspaper, it is true. I mean, because we cover the president and we cover national news, and if there is a breaking science based story that is breaking that breaks through for the average person to want to understand, but we also cover stories like the failure of the Administration for Children's Services to get a child out of a dangerous environment, and that child has now been killed by a family member, or a horrific fire that wiped out 7 people over Christmas. Those kind of stories are very much human stories that still manage to grab the reader, and they are not, in a sense, tainted by the social media pollution that we find in the context of covering our political stories. Now when we do follow up stories, we find out there is a political element, like why didn't ACS why wasn't ACS more involved in this family, and why didn't they see certain signs? The house that caught fire was the landlord at fault for not having sprinklers or these things. So there is often political elements that do end up, and then once it gets into the whole Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr virus, people may try and undermine the reporting.
Well, I think it also depends on the publication. I write for CNET, I write for Playboy, I've written for Wired, I've written for I've written for entertainment, science, tech, all across the board. And what I'm noticing now as a journalist is that what you just described is now what we're calling long form, which people are starting to read more long form articles, which, by the way, is just normal size articles, what we've been used to all these years. Most of the articles now you'll see, it doesn't matter what it is 3 paragraphs in a video or 3 paragraphs in a whatever. And the reason for that is because we're all competing with each other. Most generations now are getting their headlines from Twitter and then hopefully clicking and then reading the article. But what have I noticed on Twitter, especially with my articles, because I can tell who's clicking and who's not, I'll get an article that'll get maybe 200,000 retweets, but I get 1,000 clicks, which means they're just sharing it because that headline's shocking and everyone's sharing the headline, and then everyone's using Twitter thread to comment, so no one's even commenting in the comment section of the article. They're just commenting in Facebook and Twitter, arguing about the headline. I've had people yell at me in all caps saying, "Why didn't you cover this in the article?" I'm like, "Did you read sentence 2?" And they didn't, because they're just going off the headline. And also, all my editors, all of them, wherever I'm working, say, remember CEO keywords, and if it's trending, it'll do well.
SEO.
If it's trending, it'll do well. And that's the problem with social media right now.
Is that an issue where relevance is being defined as most popular?
Yeah.
I want to jump in on this relevance, and I really want to challenge the if it bleeds, it still leads idea. Can anybody know how many people have been killed in the civil war in Yemen?
Does anyone know where Yemen is?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's helpful.
And how many people know that the U.S. is a belligerent in that war? So maybe it kind of matters if we know how many people have been killed. There are more than 10,000 is the answer. When's the last time before the chemical weapons attack that you read about people being killed in Syria? How many people have been killed in Syria? 400,000. So if it bleeds, it don't lead.
That's a fair point. Maybe I should have said if it bleeds locally, it leads.
Yeah.
And if it's white. I mean, you know this.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you know this. Like,
not in the context of...
Internationally, if it's white and bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, I'm talking about murder stories, murder rate stories, rape stories. Kidnapped kid stories.
Kidnapped kids.
How many of you have heard of Cecil the Lion? Cecil the Lion.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this is a perfect example of trophy hunting that went bad. Several years ago, this American went and did it was considered unethical the way it was done, and basically led to the death of this lion named Cecil because he was well-known. He was collared lion. And people went crazy worldwide. This was social media. This was journalists. And I remember I was off the grid for a week, and I came back and I see all these headlines. Mm-hmm. Cecil the Lion. I'm like, who is Cecil? What is happening? And why is this lion named Cecil? And what it ended up being was this viral trend that went, but people, again, were not reading the full story. We were not understanding the full thing. I mean, this... And so it was a lot more complex. Trophy hunting is a lot more complex, but it ended up impacting policies, international policies. It also ended up making people in those countries feel like, why is this lion, this one dead lion, getting so much international attention when there's all these humans in our country and all these other atrocities that have not even like gotten a blimp on the
radar? Do you know what journalists call that? We call it the old Yeller effect. Because the movie... Oh, spoiler alert. So sorry. There's this movie called Old Yeller. A bunch of humans die in it, but when the dog dies, that's when people freak out.
You're going to ruin Bambi next, aren't you?
We call it the Old Yeller effect, where people are more concerned. I mean, you should be concerned about a lion dying, and poaching's horrible, and all of that's horrible. However, you're right. There's a lot of humans dying, and they're like, why is this lion? It's completely the Old Yeller effect. And also, we were raised on Disney. You know, we were raised on... things that we care more about, the animals dying in movies,
fairness,
than people sometimes.
In fairness, there's actual public policy connections related to poaching and things like that. The Cecil, even though people did go nuts over it, that was a little bit better than what was it, a year or a half year later, Harambe. The gorilla who gets the gorilla who gets killed in Cincinnati.
Harambe forever.
Harambe forever.
and then you do the other one.
That's an even better example of how social media really does sort of taint the broader news process, where you're trying to actually get important news out there, and instead everybody wants to focus on the fact that the gorilla got killed because the kid wandered into the gorilla pen.
Me, it's actually more alarming, the Cecil one, because here we have Westerners influencing what's happening on the ground in another country without at all considering the local perspective and the country perspective. And to me, that happens a lot, and we ignore what's actually that perspective because the Westerners have the influence, mm-hmm. and things go viral. At least this happened in our country.
It wasn't American though that killed Cecil. So I mean, I guess that did give a little bit of a.
And it's not even in our country; it's outer space. I cover NASA news a lot. I cover things you probably should be paying attention to that we're doing on the International Space Station, and I've been covering it for a long time. I wrote last week about how they sent up sperm to study it to see if it's viable so we can start producing space babies eventually, because, you know, we need to leave this planet eventually. And that, you know what stuck is everyone was like, why do they have to send space sperm up there? Isn't it the whole space station mostly dudes? Why don't they just get a magazine and a Ziploc bag? They're done. And it's like, but that headline about, I think my editor changed it to sperm in space. And that headline was the number one NASA story. And I'm like, you know, there's all this other great NASA stuff, but you care so much more about like ejaculating astronauts than you care about. But it was because the sex sells.
It's a moon money shot, is what you're saying.
It's a moon money shot. Oh, trust me. We had like 20, we have a headline thread on Slack for headline ideas. And those interns went crazy with my story. They're like, oh, I've got so many things that rhymes with jizz. And I'm like, I'm not using that. This is a respectable bubble. This isn't Playboy, and even I don't think Playboy would do that. But I was like, this is what we're living in right now, is that animal stories do well on news stories. Anything to do with sex or bodily fluids or fecal matter, right? And then anything that's shocking, and then everything else, whether it's, you know, murders we should be paying attention to or environmental issues or whatever, goes by the wayside. And it's frustrating as a journalist because we want, and it's scientists, I'm sure, and political reporters, because we want you to care more about what Trump's doing, not Trump's toupee.
I'm hearing a lot of criticism of readership in the audience. What is going on there?
Well, I want to go back to going along with that comment is the idea of having to pay for quality information and news. You know, like I think some of you were saying, like if you really want quality sources, you're going to have to pay for it. And is that a social equity issue? I mean, what for people who can't pay or can't afford?
I mean,
do they no longer have access to
Yeah, I mean, that's a sad statement for me as a journalist, because I don't write for certain news places that have paywalls. And a lot of places that did have paywalls don't anymore. Like New York Times and Wall Street Journal did. They still do if you want archived stuff or if you want maybe long-form stuff. But it's frustrating as a journalist because, you know, we're trying. We're trying very hard to give you the news that you deserve and factual and fact-checked. But also just keep in mind, reporters aren't the only people. You've got editors. You've got copy editors. You have people that are just in charge of writing your headlines, and sometimes they just look at your first paragraph, and that's it. That's why in journalism school they always teach you, make sure you have as many facts as possible in your first paragraph, because your headline writer may not read your whole story. Now that's not the case. Now it's like, grab them. Grab them in the first paragraph. Don't give them the facts till the end so they'll read the whole article, so they'll see all the advertising that they stick in between the paragraphs. So it's changed how you read. So I'm not blaming you saying you guys are lazy. It's just how you've been given the information is different now. You've got ads that are competing with your eyeballs. You've got pre-roll video that's annoying, and really hard to read an article when someone's trying to sell you something. So I get it. It's hard, and it sucks for us. Because everyone on this panel wants you to have the information that's factual. We don't care if you watch cat videos. Cat videos are great, but we want you to have all the information. But sometimes those barriers in between us and you are really annoying, but they're there. So we have to work together to get the news that you deserve.
The New York Daily News, depending on whether you're in the city or in the suburbs, it costs $1 a copy or $1.25.
Yeah, newspapers have always cost money.
Now the difference is though, sometimes if somebody may not be able to afford, you know, back then even, you know, 25 cents or 50 cents, you know, newspapers had a kind of a disposable quality to them, where people will be reading them in the morning, leave them on the subway. Yeah.
Hey, you done with that?
Picks them up and goes on. But it's internetification of news has changed the game considerably. The Daily News was purchased from the real estate billionaire Mort Zuckerman, who had owned it for about 25 years. He sold it in September to this publishing entity called Tribune Online Content, or TRONC, as they call themselves, which owns the Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun. They did, for a while, also own LA Times and San Diego Tribune, but then they sold those. And so now the Daily News is part of that stable. And the TRONC powers that be decided to create a limited paywall, where the initial fee is 99 cents for 4 weeks, and then I think it's $4 or $5 for a month after that, or something like that. As part of my job on the editorial board, I have to help put together the letters section, or we call it the voice of the people, in the Daily News. The reaction from our readers on the paywall was absolutely stunning. The letters would begin I've been a fan of your of the Daily News for forever, for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. That has to be ending now because I can't believe the greed you're exhibiting here. Even though I don't agree with its politics, I'll have to start reading the New York Post now because they don't charge, and. And this, I thought, was remarkable that, and now we'd had a number of other letters talking about who had been longtime readers who were angry about our coverage of Trump and stuff like that. But this was something very, 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 very different in that these were people who said that they were fans of the paper, they enjoyed the product that we had been putting there, but they felt that they were under no obligation to pay for it. And the thing is, unfortunately, media organizations have, in a sense, helped nurture this sort of entitlement sensibility that information that is being put in front of you, it should be somehow free. And whereas people for years had no problem spending 25 or 50 cents a day to pick up the paper, or even a dollar a day to pick up the paper. The idea of spending even $4 or $5 a month supporting quality journalism, I like to think of it as quality journalism, that's less on people's radar screens, and that I think is part of the crisis that journalism is facing.
Well, you know that also, this is kind of funny. This is. I think I thought this was the strategy all along. That if you wanted free stuff, we're going to dump a bunch, like 100 ads in there, and annoy the hell out of you. But if you don't want the ads, you could pay. You could get a subscription and get ad free. I mean, TV, Hulu does that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think one of the appeals of Netflix is, hey, there's no annoying ads every 5 seconds when you're watching a television. That's why you can binge through it because it's not an hour long because of ads. It's, you know, 30 minutes, 20 minute episodes.
But it's a paid service.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, that's the thing with newspapers. You will see, I think you're starting to see that again. That happened in the early 90s when newspapers were getting online for the first time. And then they were like, oh, wait, but we have all this advertising we can get. And by the way, early 90s advertising was even worse than it is now. So just don't get too nostalgic. The problem now is that people aren't paying extra money for better journalism. They're paying extra money to be less annoyed by advertising. So it's not necessarily meaning, oh, you're paying for all this great, you know, Bob Woodward-style investigative journalism. A lot of it's just, I'm so sick of that fucking Sherman ad. So I will pay, you know what I mean? So I will pay that extra amount every month so I don't have to see it, so I can read an article in peace and not have some sort of video just start up every time I click something.
So with all this information, can we agree that we're kind of being overloaded by information a certain degree? Do you see the bubble popping?
Mm. Well, I think fake news has kind of screwed it up. So now every time you read a headline, you're like, is this real? Is this an algorithm? Is this a Russian bot? So it's sad because I think there's even more skepticism and more and people are getting overloaded too. I think people are getting overloaded in general mm-hmm. because of social media is where they're hanging out most of the time. And even if you're not hanging out in social media, if you're watching a news, like a 24-hour news cycle, whether it's NBC, I don't even care where you're getting it, it's bombarding you. It's a lot. It's a lot of information, and it's a lot of negative information, too. I think that's why we joke about cat videos, but I almost think that's the free therapy we do so we don't all murder each other and kill ourselves, is that we need that kind of, okay, I need to decompress. It's like a Trump palate cleanser, science palate cleanser.
We know from social science that, I mean, we are actually traumatizing ourselves by watching the videos of shootings over and over, by watching the towers fall on 9/11 over and over and over, that we, you know, even as we became the safest society in this best period of human history to be born, we created a way to traumatize ourselves mm-hmm. without actually living in a war zone. And to your question, Michael, about the bubble popping, one of the ways I think the bubble pops is when we become so traumatized and so cynical. Right now, we're at this moment where lots and lots of people are really invested and really care and are seeking out all kinds of better and worse news sources and are willing to mm-hmm. kind of live through all the crap that Bonnie described. But, I mean, over time, if we become convinced that actually us consuming that stuff doesn't make any difference, that it doesn't matter what we know or what we do, which is the path that you see folks follow in authoritarian and totalitarian societies, where people just back away from consuming what's going on around them because they don't think they can know what's true and they don't think they can have any effect on it. So that's the sort of path that I worry about a lot with all the effects that we're describing.
Can I tell you where I think science, what I see this process doing to science? There are a number of my colleagues who, you know, they want to find out the science, they want to help people, they want to do science for the sake of science. There are a lot of different degrees in there, but they don't want to communicate with you all, which means you don't get to hear some of these really amazing, awe-inspiring things that are going on. But instead, we get things, you know, like vaccines, and we end up spending millions upon millions upon millions of dollars trying to disprove something that was already disproved, meaning that our ability to help you keeps getting taken away more and more and more and more. Oh, we could be studying heart disease. People don't want heart disease, right? Oh, no, but we were too busy disproving this over here because that's what people saw in the media, so that's what they went to their congressperson and said, and they said, well, now you have to study this. It takes away from the scientist's goal of actually helping people, and it kills me inside because I want you all to know how hard we're trying to help you all.
I also wanted to go back to the point, too, about this net overload of negative, traumatic things that we're seeing. Just as we were walking down here, I was saying that it's alarming to me because, one, I've noticed myself avoiding the news. Mm. And I like to think of myself as an educated, concerned citizen, mm-hmm. but it's almost too much to take. But at the same time, I think that it's almost led me to not be shocked or traumatized by things, which is just as alarming, in that I feel like I'm becoming jaded, for instance, with the school shooting. With all of these murders and atrocities that really, when these first started happening, I was emotionally reactive to them. And now it's like, I don't even know if I'm going to read the whole article. Mm. And to me, it's like, how do we balance that? And because to me, it's concerning for myself as an individual about our society. But are we becoming jaded by so much of this negative news out there, too?
What are the sources of trusted journalism? And what about confirmation bias?
Yeah, your source of trusted journalism is totally determined by your political affiliation. Yeah. There are these wonderful charts. You can look them up. They're really interesting. And there are very few sources that have any overlap. I think there are some sources that are kind of coded conservative that liberals trust to some degree, like the news section of the Wall Street Journal being one. But then you see this incredible divide, and it is getting rapidly worse, even compared to where we were 10 years ago.
Yeah, I miss the days when I would just get criticized because I was covering too much Apple news and not enough Microsoft news. Like, that was the dividing line, especially in tech journalism, right? It was like, how dare you? And now I'm seeing in tech journalism, when we don't even mention Trump, we don't even mention liberal, it comes up because I think, too, there's some readers that like to project their anger onto everything, and they just assume. So it is frustrating as a journalist that that's getting in the way sometimes because of readership. We just want you to be informed. That's it. That's it. And bias sometimes gets in the way, but also I think reader bias sometimes does,
so
too.
This is just hypothetical, you know, if I connect with a certain source because I connect with how their viewpoints, their perspectives, I trust their journalism, but it's tended to be categorized as, let's say, liberal or democratic. Yep. Am I putting myself in a worse position by just reading that as a source versus also reading maybe the alternative on the other side that maybe I don't agree with or I don't trust? Right. Because then it's at least giving me an understanding of why people are in opposition of things that I care about.
Oh, well, look, I've pointed this out on at least one other panel, that one of the crises we face in journalism is the realization that in a sense we have been lied to for 100+ years in the context that the belief that the media is objective. The earliest newspapers were founded by allies of political parties.
Yellow
journalism. No, this is before the yellow journalism. I'm talking about things like, you know, Alexander Hamilton founded the New York Post.
Right.
Benjamin Franklin provided the money for, I don't know if it was, whether it was the Philadelphia Inquirer, but a newspaper. The earliest newspapers were organs of the Federalist Party, or what was then known as the Democrat-Republican Republican Party. They were pushing specific agendas. Then, when you get into the in the parts of the 19th century, you had the Union's newspaper over here, a Democratic Party newspaper over here. You had multiple newspapers that had different agendas, and people would be picking up a lot of the different newspapers, and one newspaper covered a story this way, another newspaper covered it that way, and people somehow figured out what was going on, even though they had lots and lots of newspapers to choose from. England, the UK, still has that to a certain extent. So the point is, and I think media organizations are slowly coming around to this realization themselves, that the pristine objectivity that we've been trying to achieve for the last 100 years, maybe that's not working. Maybe that's not working anymore. And a future of Foxes over here and MSNBC. There was a story actually, I think about a week ago, that talked about the fact that CNN, which was trying to carve out this niche of being, the objective alternative to MSNBC on the left and Fox on the right, was just not working. They had fallen into third place. Fox was leading most of the moments of the day, though Rachel Maddow was now beating Sean Hannity in prime time. People were rewarding the partisan agenda of the media of media outlets, and I think other media outlets are going to start drawing that lesson.
I think Robbie's point is really relevant to the point, Michael, that you made about science as well, which is that this sensationalized environment is an outgrowth of the loss of trust in institutions overall. Mm-hmm. And we all, coming from different... I mean, look, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, so I don't exempt myself from this in any way, but folks have good reasons to mistrust science. Folks have good reasons to think that maybe the military is not telling them the truth, or that their local pollution authority or that the local corporation is not telling them the truth about what went in the river. So all of us who sort of put immense amounts of time and effort into getting our professional credentials and who understand that most people in most fields really are working very hard every day to do the right thing and that our mistakes are honest and made in the service of moving forward, it remains the case that, and I'm sort of debating whether to jump into a controversial example, and I think
do
I
it.
Will.
Do it.
So I'm the parent of a child with autism. And, I'm really lucky that my son wasn't born any earlier because science used to tell me that the reason kids had autism was that their mothers were cold. Science told us that. Mm-hmm. Science. Doctors, researchers.
Yeah.
So, while I got my kid all the vaccinations, and I, I don't lie awake at night thinking that that's why, I have a lot of empathy for people who look... I understand why people look at science and say, I don't believe you. Mm. And I totally agree with you, and I get the frustration and the loss and the waste of time and the funding. I mean, the way news drives funding priorities in really stupid ways, you're totally, totally right. But it is also a reality that lots of human beings are walking around with knowledge of how our big, respectable institutions messed up really bad in the past. And if we're going to get out of this rut, and I worry that maybe we're not, one of the ways we have to figure out is how we address the public and say, hey, we know that we weren't right 100% about this thing, or maybe in the past we have made claims about our results that were a little more confident than they should have been, but we're going to be really disciplined about saying what this means and what it doesn't mean. And that, again, I went there on a particular example, but there's lots of others, and you know, I sit on panels where people scream at me about things that the U.S. government has done overseas, and that's totally fair, too.
What sources would you recommend? You mentioned earlier that the Wall Street Journal has some credibility on both sides of the thought. What are some more? NPR?
I didn't really want to give the Wall Street Journal more of a... I'd rather redirect that question to the journalists on the panel.
Okay. We're just going to say where we write because we want to pay rent.
Giving them clicks.
You know what? I'm not even say that. I'm just going to do an open plea from all journalists. Please, please click on that link that goes to the article and just suffer through some ads, suffer whatever. You know, there's ad blockers, by the way, and if you use an ad blocker, it doesn't affect us as us getting paid. So if you want to use it, that's fine. So far, the algorithms that at least the publications I work for haven't figured out how to trick the trick the ad blocker, so you're okay there. But I mean, advertising is very sophisticated. I think online advertising is evolving faster than probably any science or tech because they want your money. Anything that wants your money is going to evolve faster.
But it is science and tech. I'm sorry to say, but those are super highly trained scientists figuring out how to manipulate us.
I did want to say, though, a lot of the places that I write for are using algorithms to determine what gets on the front page of a news site. So when you go to a front page of a news site, sometimes that isn't, when it says trending stories, those aren't actually trending. It's an algorithm that wants it to trend. So just be a little skeptical about that. But I know I'm ruining journalism for you. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. But no, please, you know, even if you're not an online person, if you don't like reading news online, buy a magazine, buy a newspaper. Those still exist. You know, do your part. Vote with your money, vote with your clicks. And also, if you don't like what's going on in the news or if you don't like how something was covered, instead of writing in all caps on Twitter that you hate us, you know, maybe write a letter to the editor. Offer, if you're a scientist, offer to do an op-ed piece. You know, offer to, we care about what you think.
I volunteer as tribute.
Yeah. I'm interviewing you for Playboy, dude. You're going to get in there for sure. I mean...
I only read it for the science interviews.
I only read it for the science. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. But I do ask that you guys, wherever you read your news, whatever your slant is, just read it. Read the article all the way to the end. Don't read the first paragraph and go, well, that was good. No, read it. Because it matters that you're reading our stuff, because if you don't, it's going to just turn into chaos, and it's your own fault. So it's, please read our stuff, and I...
Because the way the algorithms work is it's not just on the clicking, but how long you are engaging in a particular story or a particular site. You know, so, you know, staying on that...
It knows how long you're there.
Exactly.
But that's creepy. Yeah. It makes me not want to go to the site or read anything.
Well, so by the way,
sorry kids, Santa Claus may not know whether you're naughty or nice, but the algorithm certainly does.
I mean, honestly, social media has been doing that for you for decades, and you probably just now are realizing, oh crap. Yeah, thanks, Jesse Eisenberg. Zuckerberg.
If I could speak to Ralph's question, I think it's important. We can talk about, you know, mainstream newspapers and sites like the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and so forth. I would also say if you're reading about political stories and you want to get some greater context, there are partisan sites that you can go to. There are a lot of partisan sites that are out there, but there are quality partisan sites or ideological sites that you can go to help you. Most of you in here may be liberal, but I definitely recommend you go read National Review, because you've got some very, very smart people there that are going to give you. You may not agree with their with their opinion, but they're professional. They do some of their own independent reporting. So you can help put a given story that you may have read in the Times or the Washington Post in a slightly different context, and they may end up emphasizing some facts that you might not have seen in the other ones. And that's not to disparage the reporting on the other side, but you know. An editor and a reporter is always going to emphasize this fact over that fact and draw a certain conclusion. So help, you know, go to National Review or go to something like Talking Points Memo if you want to do some more researching on the left. Don't just allow that initial paper to be your only resource.
I am curious, where do the scientists read their science news from? Do you guys even... Do you go there, or you're like, you want a break from science, so you just go straight to Playboy? You do, don't you?
I'm going to be completely honest with you right now.
Yeah.
There are two main sources that I go for science, Twitter and Reddit. However, okay. A lot of the people who I follow on Twitter are other scientists.
Okay.
So they actually share their articles or, hey, I thought this was cool. Hey, I thought this was cool. Or I'll look on Reddit and they have like a science subreddit.
Yeah.
And I'll look at, oh, wow, we just found this compound that you can give to people and it poisons mosquitoes that spread malaria. Did you all know about that?
Yeah, I wrote about
That's
that.
That's pretty awesome.
I wrote about
oh,
that.
Oh, there's this other particular bacteria over here that produces this compound that stops MRSA.
Wow.
Yeah. This is stuff that we're doing.
There's been a number of questions related to news sources, general news sources, I think they're talking about. They're asking, where are the good news sources? And other questions are related to if paid journalism is mandatory. It sounds that without paid journalism, we're moving into a world of chaos. Chaotic news,
yeah.
Fake news. What's the solution to that? Well, so sources and solutions.
The alternative, I was on a panel the other day when we ended up trying to wrestle around this issue. If paywalls don't work. The public, in a sense, rejects paywalls, the other possible alternatives are some form of crowdsourcing, Kickstarter or GoFundMe to try and fund media organizations. I don't know how that would work long term. But otherwise, if that doesn't work. We are going to the new version or the contemporary version of what we had at the what I was just referring to the beginning, where you know the parties are funding media organizations and things like that, is going to be a lot of billionaires supporting them. So Rupert Murdoch has kept the New York Post running for 40 years. God bless him. The Washington Post. Forget about circulation and things like that. One of the reasons why it's in a good shape is you've got Jeff Bezos who's willing to put a whole lot of money in it. And
do they have an influence on what the content is?
Well, wait,
it varies from
person to person. Rupert Murdoch. It's faded a little bit over the last few years, but had a kind of a hands-on role in the New York Post. Mort Zuckerman, slightly less so at the Daily News, but sometimes, from what I understand, Jeff Bezos has pretty much hands off in terms of the Washington Post. But if he was more of a hands-on owner, you know, he has every right to be. That's what publishers and owners do.
I will say there's be very careful of that, because there's more and more media outlets now that are being bought out by conglomerates that just want your clicks, not necessarily they are there in an altruistic way. A great example is LA Weekly got gutted. It was a great alternative newspaper, got gutted, and now it's called crowdsourced journalism, which means anyone can write an article. whether you have, and maybe that's good, maybe citizen journalism is a good thing. However, there's no fact checking. However, it's rumorville. However, it's bias that may not be shown in the first paragraph that I believe in this, so this is what I'm writing about. So just be very, very careful about the idea of crowdsourced journalism, because those aren't journalists. Those are just a lot of letters to the editor that may or may not be factual. And that's where we're getting into dangerous territory when it's starting to be media conglomerates buying up more and more newspapers, firing all the journalists, and then putting in bloggers because it's cheaper. That is very, very dangerous. And by the way, paywalls do not work. And the reason paywalls do not work is because you all want to share your articles. And you can't have anything go viral if everyone has to pay to see the article. If they're clicking the article, if all you care about the headlines, then it doesn't matter because no one's going to actually pay for anything. It's just headlines. Well, so just be careful. Just be careful about saying only
problem.
Quality journalism is not about paywalls. It's about quality journalists, and it's about you guys clicking, and that's how journalists get hired. So just be very careful about paywalls saying that's the only way you get real journalism, or crowd-funded journalism is how we're going to get past all this.
I want to get back to Ralph's question about sources. And because we haven't, Bonnie, you brought this up, and it's really important. We haven't been talking about local journalism. We've been talking almost exclusively about national journalism. And actually, one of the places, you know, as we've all discussed, there are a set of national outlets that all of us think are still delivering not perfect, but basically good coverage of the issues that we all care about. That's not true at the local level for the reasons that Bonnie mentions. There are, though, in many places, really interesting outlets that are popping up. And so, again, what we're asking you is to be intelligent investigators and consumers and look for the really good state politics blog. I mean, the states that I look at closely have really good, reliable, thoughtful state politics blogs that you can follow if that's your interest. Places where people are doing really interesting experiments in local and state level journalism where the papers have been hollowed out. Find out who those are and support them. Local radio stations that have really, you know, journalists who are trying so hard
and podcasts
to still get out
too.
There.
There's a great journalism podcast out there to be listening to.
So it's unfortunately, we're asking for a lot of work on your part to go out and find good local journalism, but it is there.
In this issue of Follow the Money and free events, I am a word from our sponsor. We would like to quickly mention CWA 70th crowdfunding campaign. To celebrate the CWA 70th year, we have set a goal to raise $70,000. We are one quarter of the way to our goal, and we would appreciate your support. Any amount helps. You can give by selecting the donate button in your app or visiting the CWA website. And now we return to our regularly scheduled program.
And actually, that's really appropriate timing there because CWA is a good example of what that you do. You can get a quality product that you don't necessarily have to, you don't have to pay for, because as they point out, it's free and open to the public. So it's not a bad point that if you enjoy this and you enjoy seeing all of us coming here, you can do as Ralph said and support CWA there. So
good plug.
Anyway, thank you.
So are there any hopeful signs for? Because if everybody is a reporter with their smartphone, no one's a journalist. And we need journalism. We need that analysis, that synthesis. I pay for news, and I'm a news junkie. I'm from Chicago, where politics is sport. And
White Sox or Cubs?
Actually, parents White Sox, but you got to go for the Cubs when they're doing it, you know. So
you're half right.
Well, it's two things. Slightly disagree with how you with the premise there, in that these things have actually helped individuals become become journalists themselves, stories are being covered in very different ways because of this this technology. And I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, but the African American gentleman in South Carolina who was killed by a police by a police officer. In the past, even sometimes when there's been video, the cops go free. As it happened, though, there was somebody there out walking their dog and happened to capture the fact that the guy tases this individual and basically shoots him in the back. But interestingly enough, the initial trial ended in a hung jury. And then the feds came in, and the cop ended up going to jail for 20 years. The point is, these things have actually helped individual citizens become journalists themselves, mm-hmm. Or something akin to journalists. If you want, though, the real actual thing, this definitely actually helps us. It helps us because rather than just scribbling down in a notebook, we can put our notes down in here, interview the person. But you still need original sources. You still have to track down a grieving parent or track down somebody who's willing to be a whistleblower. Actual real journalism has to survive. And as we said, it really is at a crisis at the local level. When I say a local level, I don't mean a well-sized newspaper like the Daily News or the New York Post or things like that. Just individual neighborhood newspapers and media sites are going by the wayside, and it is much easier for politicians to get away with crap when they realize there are fewer eyes actually watching them.
Yeah, I would agree.
An argument, although after we've all been sitting up here telling you how bad everything is for an hour, there is an argument that this is sort of a golden age for consumers of journalism, both because there are so many more outlets, so many specialized outlets. Somebody like the three journalists on our panel are able to put together careers that look really different from what careers in journalism used to look like, and they look really different from what journalists used to look like. So, for example, 50, 100 years ago, there were newspapers, and they were staffed by journalists, and they were decently paid, but you would have had one page about women's news. Mm-hmm. There were some stories that was absolutely taboo to cover. You couldn't talk about rape. You couldn't talk about suicide. And if an African-American man was tased and shot on the street or lynched, you wouldn't ever read about it in a white publication. And so, as funny as it seems, I mean, part of what's so shocking and stressful about the way news comes to us now is how much we're able to know about the people who share the state, the country, the world with us that we just were shielded from the way that journalism was before. And so there is something very positive about that. We haven't really figured out how to manage it, but it is a positive thing.
And I would add, I graduated from this college with a degree in news editorial journalism. And then I got a letter that said, oh, by the way, we don't call our college, your division of the college, that anymore. So there is no news journalism school here anymore. They renamed it something. I don't even know what it's called. And, I hope my degree is still valid. I don't know. But it's one of those things, like, journalism's now an antiquated word. Or maybe it's a dirty word. Like, I'm on so many feminist panels, and people are like, oh, is feminism, like, or, you know, is that a bad word? People don't want to use it. I almost think journalism's that word now. People don't want to use that because...
The J word.
Because fake is used in front of it so often, right? Or people question it so much. So now I've been told by multiple sources at different news media outlets that we no longer should call ourselves journalists. We should call ourselves content strategists.
What?
Oh, goodness.
And I'm like, wait, what?
Branding.
I'm
has
like,
gone
what
too
about
far.
All the president's men? What about, you know? I was like, come on, don't do that to me. Like, journalism to us, a lot of us journalists, you know, we have icons in journalism that we've always looked up to, and it doesn't matter if you're on the Bob Woodward side or the Joan Didion side or the Walter Cronkite side or Edward Murrow side, whatever. we're journalists. We're not content strategists. We're not trying to figure out, you know, what's going to work on a page, blah, blah, blah. We're here to tell you either the truth, give you some options so you can find out the truth for yourself, and tell human stories that aren't fiction, that aren't strategized to see if you're going to click or not. So I just want to say, I mean, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but journalism right now is in a very fragile state. And we have to protect it, and we have to be champions of it. And the next generations of journalists, call yourself a freaking journalist. Do not let it turn into strategy or whatever because it's a buzzword. Be a journalist. Be proud to be a journalist. And keep writing the stories that we need to hear as a human race so we don't turn down a dark corner and wonder why that happened.
All right, we're down to 5 minutes. How about communication? We've talked about a lot of communications and access. What about if communications is the big disruptor ultimately, what about those countries that restrict communications? Mm. And are those efforts futile? Are they ultimately doomed? How about the free press?
So China, really interesting model, because China, what China does is less, well, they restrict content, but even more than restrict content, they drown it. And that's something that is quite relevant to all the things we've
fake news?
We've been talking, well,
propaganda
that you. And so what they'll do is they won't say you can't talk about the North Korean president visiting China. They'll ban the word fatty because the Chinese people have a derogatory nickname for the leader. And so they are watching, you know, back to the comment on, you know, sort of yes, people were watching how long you stay on a story. In China, they're watching what words you use to talk about a story, and if they see too many words trending, they'll just ban that particular word. It's incredibly, it's a very different model from the kind of heavy-handed censorship model, which, you know, as you can see, it doesn't work in Iran. Another thing to just mention quickly is what Russia does has been to just, you know, they don't have to sort of heavy-handedly close down the internet. They've just made it almost impossible for outsiders to operate. Yeah. So Russian citizens are living in a bubble. But it's not a bubble that they bump into the. This is a terrible metaphor because you can't bump into the walls of a bubble. But it's not. They are not aware of the limitations that have been placed on their media environment, and that again is something that's not entirely foreign to the experience we have.
Yeah.
Just to finish up, you threw out the phrase, you know, fake news. We thankfully for most of this, you know, hour plus that we've been here, except for the very beginning, we didn't talk about a certain someone except, you know, his tweets this morning. But one of the frustrating and somewhat depressing aspects is that foreign strongmen or authoritarians pay attention to what the President of the United States does and says. And even in these places where there are limits on news, these individuals, like the guy in the Philippines and the guy in Hungary and so forth, they will use the President's phrase, fake news, even though they are completely and totally legitimate and accurate stories that these incredibly brave reporters, far braver than we are here on a daily basis, are trying to report, you know, corruption and misdeeds from these governments. And these leaders are now saying fake news, and they then say, well, it's fake news. That actually gives us. That gives us license to clamp down on the reporter or the media organization over there. So as frustrating and troubling as things are over here, it's even worse in other countries.
I will say that, and this is the news, Google it, I don't care, whatever.
30 seconds.
Trump has a media list now. So it's a list of troublesome reporters, which I'm totally trying to get on. So, I mean, NSA's had a list, too. I mean, it's funny. It's like journalism, us journalists are trying to give you the news, but we also keep getting on these weird lists. Just keep in mind, when you click on things, people are watching what you click on, not just us. So, I mean, I don't want to make you even more paranoid, but it's one of those things that you are voting when you click, and it's not just ad revenue. It's not just to so I can pay rent. It's your vote. You actually may be voting in a way when you click on stuff because you're showing government officials and people that are watching Twitter and watching what you click on for other maybe nefarious reasons. You're kind of voting of saying, hey, this matters to me. And that might scare them or that might intrigue them, whatever. But just remember that. So it's more than just you're reading something. You may be telling somebody you don't even know who's watching you that you care about that particular topic.
Thank you, panel. Very interesting. Heather Hurlbut, Jennifer Thompson, Michael Johnson, Bonnie Burton, and Robert George. And thank you for being up early on a Friday morning.
Has Trump tweeted anything?